Welcome to the 20% True Podcast, Season 1, Modern Monsters, Episode 11, The Harpies of 57th Street Beach. I'm Carolyn Rahaman. The Harpies recalled the most daring feats of their sisters again and again as they prepared for the day, blushing their cheeks with electric blue shimmer, braiding each other's hair into spider webs, watching the cars pass on Lakeshore Drive. The most epic feat belonged to Orestes, with blue ribbons in her beautiful black feathers and beautiful black hair, who snatched a dozen donuts from the passenger seat of a moving SUV. She chased the van, swooping under pedestrian bridges, swerving around orange road cones, gaining on it, reaching speeds of 50 miles per hour, 60 miles per hour. Then she dropped, tucked her wings and dove, straight through the sunroof, popping open her wings black as the night the second she was through to stop her fall. She dug her claws into the box of donuts, looked the startled driver right in the eyes, his coffee halfway through his mouth. "Speeding! Reckless!" she shrieked. Then she burst from the sunroof and flew back to the beach house to share her treasure with her sisters. She flew back a legend. She flew back immortal, enshrined in pink icing and rainbow sprinkles. The flock perched in a row on the eave of the beach house roof. Traffic on Lakeshore roared just behind them. The city at their backs, the choppy lake before them. The beach was deserted, only a few joggers passing by, and none of them with anything more substantial than a Cliff Bar and a fanny pack. The Harpies despised fanny packs. There was no grace to snatching food from them, and, since the Harpies were nothing if not fashionable, there was no joy in just taking the whole fanny pack to get at the food with it. To get at it, at least two of them had to knock the jogger to the ground, then flap and screech and tear at the zipper. Not worth it at all for a Cliff Bar. The Harpies also despised Cliff Bars. They spent the early hours of the morning preening, combing their hair, braiding and threading with sparkling beads, pruning and glossing their wings, passing the two tubes of lipstick and the rainbow pad of eyeshadow with the parrot green and the pumpkin orange running low. Thessaly had switched to red. Red eyeliner like blood swooped in a sharp wing beside her eyes. Red tinged the edge of each of her feathers, scallops of metallic crimson as she rolled her wings to braid Ellis's hair into a net sparkling with sharp green glass. The Harpies slowed, then paused their work, all eyes tracking the gangly man who walked up to the beach house. He eyed the Harpies, glaring at them, but knew better than to try to shoo them away. He set his shoulders and unlocked the food hut, slamming the door behind him, sending up a prayer that the Harpies would go elsewhere for the day. Chaonia bristled with spite and suggested staying just to teach him. Some nodded, eyes narrowing. Arcadia cawed in protest, tapping a clawed foot against the flyer she'd found. Lobster Fest. Cecily scouted away from the lake into the neighborhood, a gentrified area with a brand new chain coffee place with pumpkin bread that all the sisters loved, right next to the Smiley Mart, where prices were all rounded to the nearest quarter. She pruned her left wing as she waited, perched on a light post. A man in a cheap suit caught her attention. He walked quickly down the sidewalk, a box tucked under his arm. She dove and snatched it, calling, "Thief! Embezzler!" as she sailed onto a nearby unfinished level of condos under construction. The man cursed from the sidewalk, but she ignored him. He was unable to reach her, and his punishment was completed unless he wanted to push his luck and have her follow him the rest of the day and deny him all sustenance, proclaiming his sins to the world. She peeled the plastic wrap from the box, and after a moment, the man realized his defeat and left. Inside the box were a dozen chocolates, each wrapped in gold foil and placed in its own private indentation. Tilting her head to the side, she rolled one chocolate in her talon, holding it up to catch the light. With a gentle claw, she peeled back the foil to reveal a ball sprinkled with salt and cocoa. Caught in the wind, the smell swept over her, rich and deep and mouth-watering. She closed her eyes and inhaled, letting the smell of dusty cement and tar fade into sweet warmth, into the image of an old-world kitchen, bursting with layers and layers of tantalizing aromas. She took a bite and the chocolate burst with flavor, a smooth center reminiscent of the decadent fruit of the underworld. It melted against her tongue, the shell popping on her soft palate. A blush spread from her chest to her cheeks, her mind dizzy with longing for another bite, then another. And then the gold wrapper was empty. She jumped as a plastic tarp fluttered behind her, and below came the clanging of metal on metal, the grind of a bobcat. She would be a hero, maybe a legend. Her sisters would rejoice, reveling in the divine taste. Their eyes would roll up and their cheeks would flush, their feathers puffing in delight. She fumbled the lid back onto the box, then stilled, the gold embossed pattern on the front calling to her, singing just as strongly and longingly as her flock. Or she could keep them for herself. She didn't have to share. She could come back tomorrow and have another bite of heaven, and the day after that. They could all be hers for 12 whole days. She licked her lips. She hid the box deep in the back of the construction site and returned that evening with a 12-pack of 7-Up, a bag of Funyuns, and a sleeve of Oreos from the Smiley Mart. Her sister smiled and added her contribution to the pile of their scavenged feast. A man had spilled his Jamba Juice over a woman's Ulta bag at a bus stop, and Doris had swooped in and snatched the whole bag away with a caw of malpractice! Inside the bag was liquid eyeliner in 3 colors and a flat iron, making Doris a legend. It went to her head. It diverted attention. One harpy chirped, the feathers on her back ruffling and her narrowed eyes piercing into a large man in swimming trunks and a sleeveless shirt, his arms full of hot dogs and fries and soda and snow cones from the food hut. The harpies straightened. The attention of the whole flock locked into place. They shifted from foot to foot, a neck tilt here, a wing twitch there. The man paused, shifting the tray of soda further up his arm, before heading toward his gaggle of children and extended family swarming over the sand. The flock pounced. A scuffle of feathers, snapping claws, screeches of adulterer, liar, dishonorable. The man shouted and threw his arms up to cover his face in a shower of fries that one harpy snatched off the ground. They snatched up hot dogs and plucked up sodas, screaming their rage. The man lay on the ground in a fetal position as the flock dispersed, carrying their goods back to the beach house roof. He unfolded enough to see Ella standing over the last hot dog. It was covered in ketchup. The harpies despised ketchup on hot dogs. She looked him right in the eye as she said, "Betrayer!" and defecated on the offending hot dog. She launched into the air to join her crowing sisters. They feasted on fries and passed around the carefully preserved snow cones. Thessaly held a soda in one clawed foot. Her painted lips puckered as she sipped through a straw. They tossed hot dogs in the air to catch them, gulping them down whole in 3 or 4 choke swallows. They picked apart the buns with a delicacy and finickiness expected of creatures of their high stature. They watched the man's wife curse him. They watched the man the rest of the day, ready to swoop down again should he try to eat a single bite. Sitting off to the side, separated from his family by an icy breeze, head bowed and shoulders hunched, shooting looks over his shoulder at the trilling harpies. He did not try to eat again. Thessaly returned to the chocolates the next day, and the next. The third day, fatigue clung to her wingtips like the red she dyed into the edges, and although she'd managed to bring increasingly more pumpkin bread to her sisters to alleviate her deception and her guilt, she had trouble on the third day moving quickly enough to avoid retribution from her targets. Surprise and speed were a harpy's finest skills. A woman caught Thessaly in the shoulder with her purse, one of the big hobo purses. Thessaly screeches of "Vandal! Trespassing!" and her stunning and frightening beauty, attributes that had never before failed her, struck no fear. They caused no cowering. The woman just pursed her lips and swung her bag again, shouting, "Shoo!" Her sisters took pity on her that night, brushing her hair in soothing strokes with their single brush, stroking her feathers and setting a cold Pepsi bottle against her shoulder. The next day she felt even worse, more worn out and groggy than ever. The chocolate danced against her lips, like a secret kiss. Her skin paled to the point where her sister scrubbed off the red makeup and leaned into the new coloring, painting her in shades of blues and purples, like bruises under her eyes and cheekbones. Her feathers frayed and dulled, the bright metallic red burnishing to the dull brown of dried and flaking blood. Her sisters pruned her, and gave her more than her fair share of canned green vegetables. But it didn't help. Her hair frazzled, becoming brittle and shaggy. Arcadia gave her a long look, then said, "Conditioner," and dragged her out to the wave break to scrub her scalp with conditioner from their single bottle. Thessaly remembered from the last time the conditioner made an appearance that it smelled so much like vanilla and coconut that she could almost taste it. Chaonia had gone so far as to lick it a bit, then rear back in disgust as the rest of the sisters laughed and chirps and crows. But now, with her hair scrubbed into a lather that stung her scalp, all she could smell was the chocolate waiting for her. Just for her. The taste filled her mouth and slid down her throat, and if her eyes weren't closed in ecstasy, she was sure she could see goosebumps run down with the creamy center into her belly. She flapped her way to the construction site every day that the flock split up, her flight awkward and jolting. One day she had to stop halfway to rest. The next day she stopped twice. One day she actually walked for half a block, hobbling along the sidewalk and snapping at people's heels, muttering, "Inhospitable, cruel, conceited." Then came the morning she couldn't get up. The flock had camped on the overturned rowboats that the lifeguards used during the day, parking them on the beach overnight. Thessaly raised her head, but fatigue made her wings heavy and her vision spun, and she settled her head down again. Her sisters pecked around her, hopping from foot to foot, blanketing her with their wings, alternating between trying to pep her into movement and snuggle her in for a deeper sleep. They needed to bring her more, they decided amongst themselves. Better food. From worse people. That was all they could think to do for her. They'd never seen a harpy fade before. Harpies did not get scared, they got angry. They screeched at the man who ran the food hut as they left, throwing sand into the air and knocking over a trash can, screaming promises to their sister that they would do anything for her, everything for her. Better food from worse people. Fat, hot tears leaked from Thessaly's eyes, splashing onto the hull of the rowboat. When it was time to take out the rowboats, the lifeguards had a discussion. They'd never seen a sick harpy. Was it dangerous? Did it have bird flu? Should they call animal control? Thessaly raised her head enough to hiss at them and refused to move. Where the looks they gave her used to be disgust mixed with fear, now they wore disgust mixed with concern. She spat at them and folded herself deeper into her ball of feathers. The lifeguards took out the other rowboat. She wanted the last chocolate, just the last one before she died. She'd die in the construction site, smiling with the sweetness singing on her breath. Her sisters wouldn't have to find her body, her dull, spindly, aching body. She'd just disappear. They shouldn't waste their food on her and her treachery. They should forget her since she was not a legend. In the afternoon, she slumped off the rowboat, more of a fall than anything, sand catching in her feathers and in her hair. The beachgoers gave her a wide berth, staring and murmuring as she shuffled past, one wing dragging behind her, her head bent as if in a high wind. She huffed and gasped as she launched herself into the air, careening over lakeshore and barely making it over the last lane of speeding cars before flopping to the grass on the other side and sleeping under a park bench until dusk. Hopping and moaning and slumping along, she reached the construction site late into the night. Her sisters would wonder where she went, or they would think she died, brushed away like a pile of sand, or washed out to the call of the water. They'd sing a grieving song, a lament of such agony it filled the lake with tears. There was only one chocolate left, gold and gleaming even in the orange light of the street lamps. She held it in her claw, and had no strength to unwrap it, to taste it, to swallow and enjoy. The lake and her sisters, her death and their sorrow, called to her. Thessaly dropped back across lake shore as the sky turned pink and orange. Two of her sisters caught her in midair and hauled her onto the beach house roof. They twittered about her, picking at her hair in anxiety, offering up sips of warm Sprite. She couldn't catch her breath. Her every joint and muscle ached. With dull, blurred eyes, she offered up her last chocolate, clutching it tight in a talon. Ellis chirped in confusion, took it from her with gentle claws and unwrapped it. The smell of chocolate washed over the flock. They each took a nibble and a lick, their eyes lighting, their feathers puffing. Thessaly smiled and rested her head, the ache fading from her bones as the sun rose over the lake. The 20% True podcast was written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahaman. If you like the show, please consider rating or subscribing on iTunes. It helps new people find the show. If you'd like to chat about this episode, visit the Facebook page, facebook.com/20percenttrue. Visit the website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter at Carrie and the Hits.